Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Adam White is ready to roll and watch every single stroke, although he will be 100% focused on great quality content for the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning. I'll be trying my best.
No, quality content focus.
No, I will. I'll let you know exactly what's going on in golf.
No, quality content focus.
Good morning.
I don't want to have to pull rank and just take the screen off you. I don't want to have to do that.
It's been quite a remarkable start to the final round, I'll be honest with you.
Stand by. Stand by. Adam Ramanauskas is with us, former Bombers champion, these days manager to the Stars, and he's even set up his own computer to watch as we go along through the morning. Is that what you've done there, Rama? Good morning.
Well, sort of. Whitey's been here since last night. He slept in the boardroom.
I don't think that's entirely inaccurate.
What time did you get here, Whitey?
No, I'm not entirely sure. It was before five. I just wanted to get I wanted to get an early feel for things.
Are you investing usually, on the run? Are you on the run? Are you in the run sort of stuff? Is that what you're doing?
No. Emotionally invested and maybe financially invested as well, but that's okay.
Usually Whitey is even late to our sort of pre-show meeting.
He's always late to
that. Yeah.
I'm yet to see him.
And there's times where in the studio, you're through the first 15 minutes before he comes in sometimes. And now he's here pre-5 a.m.
Yep.
Yeah.
The one day of the year.
Amazing. One day of the year. Like if he wants to, he can.
No doubt.
That's all that it comes
to. So clearly he didn't sleep.
It's a desire.
Didn't sleep last night?
Not really.
Yeah.
Bit going on.
Yeah.
It is remarkable. Can we set the scene to start with?
Paint the picture.
Hideki Matsuyama is the leader. He remains the leader. He is at 11 under. He is even through his first six holes. But he could very easily be three or four over. Yeah. He's held a lot of par putts. He's escaped a lot of damage, which is a little bit like what he was doing yesterday, but those putts that he was making were for birdies. Today they're for pars.
It's a horrible drive.
Yeah, he's battling a bit at the moment, Hideki, but he still leads by three. And one of the key reasons why he leads by three is that, have a look at this. This is the leaderboard at the moment. Zalatoris is in second position. He's one under through seven. Justin Rose is one over through seven. John Rahm is the only one that's making any sort of move. He is five under, but he's played 14 holes. Then Leishman is plus two through seven. Harman is even through eight. Shuffley is plus three through six. Spieth is plus two through eight. And Connors is plus three through seven. So they're all struggling. And the greens, I've never seen them the colour they are. Remember Ian Baker Finch said last week, Half, that the greens might go a bit purple, almost sort of Royal Melbourne-ish, because they're so firm.
You can say that.
Yeah, they are looking very different to what you'd usually see, which means they're really, really hard and they're really fast, and scores, apart from John Rahm, are difficult to make.
How old is Zalatoris?
He's only young.
Like he's 12.
Yeah, so he's.
He's out of shave yet.
He's from that generation, sort of that Morikawa, Cameron Champ, those sorts of players that haven't been around long, but they kind of have no fear. And
he looks like the only challenger at the
moment. Yeah, Zalatoris has only ever won once, which is on the secondary tour, the Korn Ferry Tour. He's just inside the top 50 in the world. That's why he's there. He's only ever played once in a major and finished top 10. So he says he doesn't get nervous. Well, we'll certainly find out whether that's true in the next couple of hours, because he's in second place and looks really the only one that can catch Matsuyama based on what we've seen so far.
We'd be happy for Hideki, though, wouldn't we?
It'd be amazing.
First Japanese male to win a major tournament.
It'd be
we
major,
would, wouldn't we?
It'd be.
Yes, we would.
You backed him.
I can't say too much.
Did he?
But there might be some team cash.
All right. Okay.
So there's some team cash after round one.
That's all right. It would be an amazing result for golf. And, he's looking at a situation where the pressure that will be on him. We often talk about that with Naomi Osaka and what she's been able to do to tennis in Japan. Mm. And the pressure that was on, say, Kei Nishikori from a men's perspective. But if he was able to win this would be massive. I mean, he's been a good player for a long time and he's contended in majors for quite a while now, but if he was able to hold on and win, it'd be amazing.
Well, remember what Adam Scott's victory did for golf in Australia when he finally got the chocolate at Augusta. Imagine the response in Japan if our man Hideki had his moment As Zalatoris plays his third into eight. I've been there. Now, it's a difficult shot, that.
Have you been there?
Well, you would
know.
You might be surprised. I've
really
been to Augusta.
Really? Yeah, when did you go there?
Tell us the story.
Well, 16 years and one day ago.
Was that the year that Tiger Woods chipped in on 16?
On 16.
Were you at that green?
I was at the top, just talking to Craig Perry at the back, top of 18.
I've never heard this story.
As he finished.
Never heard this story, ever in my life.
I can tell you, that was a difficult chip from Amanda Zalatoris. Not easy in that position. You've got to really feel the ground underneath you there. That's a really dangerous spot. He's played it well there.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Delvecchio. Yes, a lot to look forward to through the morning. We will certainly be giving you an update on how the leash is going.
Yeah, unfortunately,
he's shouting all the golf clubs with his own beer.
Unfortunately, for Mark, I kind of thought going into the final round he was the logical danger to Matsuyama because he'd won more than anyone else around the lead, apart from Justin Rose, who kind of never gets it done or very rarely gets it done when it matters most. But he just couldn't get going. He bogeyed the first, he birdied the second, but then he bogeyed the third, and he just hasn't been able to get on a bit of a roll.
He hasn't attacked, really, has he yet?
I think it's pretty hard to attack. That's what makes John Rahm's round of golf so extraordinary. He's actually just made another birdie to get to six under.
He's fearless.
He started 11 behind, and now he's only 5 behind.
And that's the thing. The mindset of on Sunday at Augusta is so interesting. Like, if you're that far back, often you'll see someone shoot 64, and just have a great day, because that doesn't really matter. They'll finish second or finish third. Johnny Rahm's having one of those moments, I think, today. There's no pressure. 11 shots back, just shoot for the fences and see what happens. And it's coming off at the moment. But if you're in the contention, because of what it carries, a little bit tight on the shoulders, Rahmer, and they just don't have that freedom of movement.
It's always interesting. Like Leish probably doesn't necessarily need the money. Like, where he finishes, he's obviously made enough in prize money. So, yeah, okay, what did he start? Four back? Whitey, four back at the start of the round?
Who's that?
He was four
Leish?
Back, yeah.
He was four back.
Yep.
You just go, well, just go have a crack. If I win it, fantastic, obviously. But if I lose it and lose shots, well, I'll go down swinging.
Yeah, but it's one of those things. That's all well and good, but you kind of also know that a lot of players won't cope with the pressure. So there is always a bit of a balance. I mean, Xander Schauffele looked like he was going, quite nicely early, and then he goes bogey, double bogey, and
all
can
over.
Change all very quickly. Anyway.
We'll keep you abreast of that through the morning. A bit happening in the world of sport. We saw, some great action in the world of football across the weekend. Did you see the football? Did you see the Matildas go down to Germany in 5-2 on Saturday night?
No.
They got mauled.
Mauled.
So I watched the first half. I was up doing some stuff. I don't know what I was doing. Watched the first half. Could not get their foot on the ball, Rahmer.
No, they were no good at all. So that's their first game in...
in a while, yeah.
Yeah, in a long... So, okay, let's give them a mulligan on that one and they can go again. But, yeah, that wasn't a... that wasn't a great night, great day for the Matildas.
Not fantastic for our girls.
You see the W League final yesterday?
Oh my goodness!
I did see that finish.
What about that?
So, the goal is from the cross, or is it an own goal? Because it's sort of, it was a really interesting how that ball actually went in the net in the end.
Well, they claimed the goal from the corner.
Yeah.
That's where the goals come from.
So the 120th minute. So the last minute of extra time, Sydney had been crowned the premiers. Are they the premiers or the champions? I can't remember which one. It's one or the other.
No, champions would be the winner of the finals.
So the premiers were the ones that were through the year.
Yeah.
And there'd been no goal, and the goalkeeper for Sydney had been just unpassable. And then they have a corner right at the end and just curls. And there's about 50,000 people on the goal line. And somehow
the keeper got a hand to it.
Gets through.
Clearly got a hand to it.
It was just a clutter of people and ball and whatever else. And all of a sudden it's in the back of the net.
Steve Hocking would have been flat with the congestion of the goal line. He would have been very flat with that. With Kyra Cooney-Cross, who is the hero for the Melbourne victory in that 120th minute, curling one back in from the corner. It was that close that I'm not sure the keeper knew what to do in the end.
Well, Jada Wyman was the keeper, was the player of the match in a losing team. It was quite remarkable.
Well done to the girls, the mighty Melbourne Victory girls, holding up their end of the bargain. The boys at the moment having some challenges in that regard. The mighty Melbourne Victory, not so mighty.
Well, they had a win over the weekend.
Well, they did.
Finally was able to buck the trend a little bit.
Still a little bit deep in proceedings for our liking. The mighty Melbourne Victory. Speaking of the girls doing great things, did you see the England had their own Michelle Payne moment?
Yes.
They had their own Michelle Payne moment. Rachel Blackmore took out the Grand National on the weekend on Manila Times. 11-1, the horse was. The 173rd edition of the Great Race, the Grand National in England. And for the first time, a female jockey took out the chocolate set's been big business over there.
Yeah, it is. I mean, until 1975, women weren't able to actually ride in the race. And so there's only been about a dozen that have done it since that time. So to have that victory, I mean, we talk about what's happening here at the moment with almost the domination of women jockeys, but it's happening across the world as well, so particularly in the UK. So, yeah, it was quite remarkable what happened because, of course, Jamie Carr won the big race on the weekend in Sydney as well.
Hideki's just missed a three-footer.
That was a birdie.
You, Harfoot, had your eye on the AFLW prelim finals over the weekend?
I did.
The Adelaide-Melbourne one?
Yes.
Now, Chelsea Randall, obviously, who is captain.
Chelsea is captain of the Crows.
And now won't be playing in the grand final.
Well, we've always talked about this scenario, haven't we? With all these scenarios, what if it happens in a prelim, all this stuff?
What if it was the best player in the competition?
What if it was the best player in the competition? Well, we might have two of the one stone there with Chelsea, who is absolutely one of the stars, let alone the captain, in a head clash early doors with Liza McNamara, one of the rookies of Melbourne. Mm-hmm. And they win the game, go through 12-day protocol.
No Chelsea.
Chelsea can't play.
Nope.
She cannot play.
So, this will open the conversation up about the pre-finals bye.
Correct.
Versus the pre-grand final bye. If you're going to have an extra week, are you better to have it before the grand final to avoid this situation? Or are you better to have it where it is? Now, because the argument is that there'll be players that will miss the first weekend of finals as well, potentially, with this new 12-day protocol.
Well, this is the thing, it's eight. So use the men's now because obviously their next final series coming up. It's eight teams that you're looking to help, or is it two teams you're looking to help?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to
that. Yeah, well, I think
showcase game, I think you want your very best players available.
Two teams. Yeah, your grand final, you're right, it's the Super Bowl system.
Yeah.
Have the week off beforehand. Have the Pro Bowl, I think, in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Do what you need to do in that weekend, that's fine. But make sure that the grand final gives everyone the best chance to be ready to go for that encounter. And because we are, and this is the change in legislation with concussion and the protocols surrounding that, changed the whole conversation about the week off.
Which, mind you, I'm all for.
No,
fully for it.
Fully supportive.
Yeah.
Fully supportive of that. No dramas there. But if this were to happen to, let's say, who's going to play in the grand final? Let's say Port Adelaide and
Richmond.
Say Trent Cotchin or Dusty Martin. Dusty gets in a bit of a tiz in the prelim, cops a bit of a whack to the bonce, doesn't play. The Tigers go through. Could you imagine the conversation? Yeah. So it is a fascinating time at headquarters and what they do with this, because I think the concussion protocol changes the whole conversation here, changes the thinking about what they want to do with that pre-finals bye and where they put it.
You hate to say it like this, but if Chelsea passes all the concussion tests and all that sort of stuff during the week, there's not a lawsuit where Adelaide could go to the AFL.
Well, you play under the conditions of the competition.
Yeah, that's what I would hope. You don't want to see that happen, but you could see an AFL club potentially going down that path. Like if it was Dustin Martin, for example, Richmond have got the cash to go and do that, haven't they?
Yep. What do you reckon? 1-300-652-927 or 0416-90-5052. Let us know. You're right. You would hope it wouldn't happen because you would play under the rules.
Under the rules,
the competition.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this next couple of minutes.
Why is that?
Good morning, Sam. You're there, Sam. Can you hear
really,
us?
Really, really unfair, Sam.
I'm here, Whitey. I haven't gone away. I've been waiting for... The boys up here have been telling me that Rammer owes me an apology, and that's why I came on.
Now, firstly, what's the weather like up at Swan Hill?
Fantastic, mate.
Always is.
Now I've got just give you a couple of secs because I've got that much. I've got 12 months to load on the Rammer.
Come on, Sam.
For those that don't know, Sam's
both barrels. Sam's I want
a,
both barrels.
Sam's a Collingwood supporter. Hasn't been a great fan of Nathan Buckley.
Saturday, again, we go back to this construction football of Nathan Buckley's, you know, where you walk into a construction site and it says, put your helmet on, turn back, go sideways, go to the office. We don't go forward because we've got no chance of kicking any goals. We have about 10 or 12 degraders. They have now worked out how to play Brody Grundy, and he goes up for the ruck and just knocks it at his feet. I watched yesterday the best ruckman in the comp in Max Gawn, and he puts it down the midfielder's throats. Grundy can't do that. Now, the coach doesn't make any moves. We have got, supposed to have had the best midfield. We haven't even got a Manangatang midfield at the moment. Where are we going? We've got about three or four players.
Yeah, Rama. Where are they going?
Seb, can I ask you a question?
It's a fair question, Rama.
Sure can, mate.
What would you like the Collingwood Football Club to do?
I would like the Collingwood Football Club to get rid of about 8 or 10 players who are no good. Do you want me to name them?
Go for it.
Right. I'll start from the back line. The full back. Footscray got rid of him. We've got two backmen who were picked in the All-Stars last year in Crisp and Maynard. They are the turnover kings of the world. They can't hit a target. Now, they haven't learned. We've got Thomas. We've got Hoskin Elliott. We've got the two Brown boys. We've got Main. We've got Jack Madston. Mate, they are never going to make footballers. For God's sake, play some kids. Do you want me to keep going with them? Sire. We're no good.
Well, I think, Sam, that based on Saturday night, and I'm always reluctant to sort of make big calls after round four, but based on, I never saw that happening on Saturday night.
No.
They do look like they've almost got to the brink with this group. And Nathan Buckley has got to the brink with this group. And it looks like into that, he sort of stayed very loyal to his 2018 group that got them to a grand final. But he has now reached a point. And it's either you've got to change the players or you've got to change the method. Now, I still feel the need to change the method. But I'm interested in your thoughts, Rama and Half, about what should they be doing? It's probably a discussion for Jimmy as well.
Yeah, I think it's more enough to 7-1.
Is it personnel or methodology?
From Saturday night, they needed to attack an opponent that was bereft of confidence early in that game on Saturday night.
And experience.
Yeah, and then experience. And they weren't capable of doing that. So Sam is partly right where it was method over probably intent. The intent wasn't there early from Collingwood. And it played into GWS.
But Rama, the methodology has been an issue now for Collingwood for quite a while. Yeah. And when you're seeing other teams, and there's another very successful team that's got this issue as well, where we're just seeing this inability not only to score, but to seemingly want to score.
Isaac Quaynor is going to be a very good player. But there was only one player that was going to beat Collingwood on Saturday night, and he did. Toby Green. He was absolutely dominant. Kick five. He kept them going. He kept them going. When they were slowing down, he'd kick a goal, Toby. Why Maynard wasn't on him from the start. Now, I know Sam Maynard's not your favourite player, but I couldn't quite figure that out. Maynard went on to Green after his fourth goal. After his fifth, and didn't kick a goal for the remainder of the game.
Yep.
So, you know, five goals, that's the difference in the game.
When you lose by five.
That's right. It's a difference.
But also the Giants changed. They tried to be a little bit more aggressive. They changed up what they had been doing. Yeah, but they changed up what they had been doing previously, whereas Collingwood served up the same stuff.
Look, they've got some questions around them, the Pies, and whether they can work it out or not. We'll talk about it after 7.5, but yeah, it's a tricky road because they have, who have they got this week?
They got West Coast in
West Coast over there.
And they got, then they've also got,
come back and play Essendon.
Yeah,
here
they've also
Anzac
got
Day.
Gold Coast, North Melbourne. They've got,
they might square the ledger back up.
Their middle part of the season, now it's based on how you see Collingwood.
Melbourne's on top of the ladder.
No, North Melbourne.
North Melbourne.
Yeah, but it's based on how you see Collingwood against these two sides. I never thought that Collingwood would lose to the Giants. But they have got time and they have got a draw that they can sort of level themselves up. But it is a point of, okay, well, what's the point of that?
They play
what's
well.
What's the point of getting to 10 wins, 11 wins, if you're just going to be stuck in the middle?
Well, Again, this is the argument. Do you want your team playing finals year on year, or do you want your team right at the very, very pointy end? Like, it's
the big challenge, though, for Nathan Buckley.
Only one team can win a premiership.
Yes, but that's right. But this is the big challenge for Nathan Buckley is that with Treloar leaving the football club, Phillips leaving the football club, Stevenson leaving the football club.
A lot of run and carry out of the team.
That's right, a lot in the midfield. Yep. And Pendlebury looks like, on Saturday night, he looked like a 300-game veteran. A lot is going to be up to Pendlebury and Sidebottom to be able to continue to carry that midfield.
Yeah.
Adams could be out for 6 or 8 weeks. So what I'm saying is that that's where they're at.
We'll talk more about it after 7. There's a discussion to be had about the Magpies and where they are and what they do from there. I think you're right. That's a valid point. But there's a discussion to be had about how they play this from here and what's required for Nathan Buckley and his coaching staff. Hideki's just gone through the green at 8 for his second par 5, of course, so he's got a decent chance to get another shot on the field there if he can do it. Mark Leishman is off the leaderboard, Whitey. Why is he off the leaderboard, please?
Well, unfortunately, he didn't make birdie on that par 5 eighth up the hill, which is a bit of a setback for Mark. He's just not making ground, unfortunately. So while Matsuyama's not pushing away, as I said, no one is really putting any sort of scoreboard pressure on him.
Are we happy with his...
Salatore is not.
He's the one that's... But he's not 4 under for his round.
Are we happy with his top 10 prospects? A man in the leash?
Well, those are cashed out at the $8. Doesn't matter, really. Or $7.50, whatever it was. But he's still okay.
Okay,
I can't believe we're talking with our wallets this morning.
No, we're just concerned about the Australian's welfare.
Australian. Mark, he's Australian. And Cameron Smith are both in the top 10.
Matsuyama's not Australian. Golf.
Matsuyama? No, but this is history in the making. You might be seeing history this morning, Rama. We are about historic sporting moments.
I'm not sure about Zalatoris with this sort of arm action with the putter.
It's 9 under.
Yeah.
It's working.
Off the SMS, we traded their first rounder to the Giants too. Must be a Collingwood supporter.
Yeah, but
you've got Dacos coming through, so that's okay.
Dacos had another 30-possession, 3-goal game in the under-18s.
That's okay. You got a pretty good player coming through. So the first-round pick was planned for to lose that because you didn't really need it. So you got what you could out of it last season in that regard. Jim, how was your weekend?
It was full of footy, which was great. Took Clown Hands along to his first game of footy, which was fantastic.
For those that don't know, your son, referred to as Clown Hands.
My oldest boy is referred to as Clown Hands. His hands don't match his body. They're abnormally large. He's yet to grow into them. They're massive.
Big mitts.
He's got huge mitts and huge feet, but yeah.
I don't know. Okay. So just a reference point for our listeners when you talk about Clan Hands.
Yeah, Clan Hands. He liked it. He wanted to see a bit more action, and I think we'll talk a bit about the Cats. I know Whitey's big on it. He wanted, at 5, he identified a ball use a bit more from the Cats. He wanted more goals, more action, and he wanted to see the forwards kick a few more goals, which I think he was 100% right. Look, they actually did really well defending for the first half Geelong, but their refusal to take the game forward, it just hurts them. You just keep the opposition in the game. And the Ds, they're mature. They've actually got some wind in their sails at the moment. And there's a real confidence about if they can hold the opposition, they just know that they're going to score now.
Well, let's start there, Jim. It's a good little teaser. I love the fact that you've got a 5-year-old identifying ball movement patterns, which is fantastic. In the end, it was the Ds by 25 points, 12-13-85 to the Cats, 9-6-60. You said something there amongst that little interlude that I think is very, very relevant, particularly with the way the game has evolved in 2021. The way that Geelong play, and Clown Hands picked this up beautifully, keeps teams in it. Yes. Even when they're not playing well, this is what happened last Monday with the Hawks at the MCG. They kept the Hawks in it because they don't score, and they try and strangle you a bit. But if you can break through and put a bit of heat on them defensively, you can keep yourself in the game, win games of footy that you probably should never win. Now, Melbourne, I think, should have won that game yesterday. Looked in control for most of it.
Probably by more, to be honest. Yeah. It felt like more at the ground.
So a slightly different scenario from that game. But because of the way that they move the ball and defend with the ball, they keep games in it. They keep teams in it.
Yeah, and look, Geelong supporters and will go, there's no Cameron, there's no Rowan, there's no Dangerfield. Puffit. As well. But I didn't think it was actually a personnel reason why they didn't take the ball forward. This is not a this year issue. This has been Geelong for the last 3 years, if I'm to be fair. And I find it a bit surprising because, you know, I played a couple of games there and there at Geelong, and I know the way they train their players and what they actually value is players who win the game in a contest and one-on-one, but then there is even a greater shift to not taking the one-on-one. So in the first quarter, I thought Jake Colajasny, a couple of really good turnovers, high at half-back, Stewart. There was the opportunity. They did find that release. That's all right, finding that next one, you know, a bridge kick to switch the play or take a bit of territory. But even against the Hawks and the Ds yesterday, can you envisage or remember in your mind any times they just took the one-on-one forward?
Why is it happening? Because it continues to happen, and you hear the players, and they say, we want to move the ball quicker. We do want to move the ball quicker, but it's not happening. So that's what I don't understand. There's two parts to it. It's the fact that they've done it this way for quite some time, but then the players say they don't want to do what they're doing, but they do it.
Yeah, but this is the thing. They did move it quicker, but they went nowhere. So they actually didn't hold on to the ball, but they went lateral, sidewards, around, backwards, sideways, lateral, forward, sideways. So they actually did move it quicker. But with no gain, at some stage you've got to pull the trigger and go, you know what, he's on the podium for best three contested players inside forward 50. We've got him in our forward line, in Tom Hawkins.
But it's still not answering the question, why are they doing it?
No, it is, because I think in their mind they are moving the ball quicker. Because I saw a number of players, especially when it came down interchange side, they got it, moved the ball on. But again, it was short, it was wide. That guy went back off the mark, moved it on.
But Jimmy, when they got five goals down the first time, they got back in within 12 points, I think it was, and they looked dangerous because they were moving the ball quickly and taking some risks. And, gee, Tom Hawkins looked dangerous because he was one out deep.
Surprise.
Then they revert back again.
Watching Geelong, and then you go back to Friday night and you look at the way Port Adelaide played against Richmond. I don't think Geelong create enough chaos ball.
Yeah.
Whether it looks like it's out of control, but it's unpredictable to the opposition. It looks like Geelong are becoming really predictable to the opposition now. So you look yesterday, Melbourne, I don't think ever felt threatened.
No.
Within that game. Like, yeah, a little bit at the end of that third quarter, but then they kick the first two goals of the last quarter, and it's really game over. When teams look at their most dangerous is when it's almost out of control. When the ball's just flicking around and flying around and you're letting your players play. Players now are good enough to work it out on the run. And I think that's been a bit of a change in Melbourne's game, that they wanted to play this perfect game over previous seasons. And it's like, well, that doesn't work. We need to throw the ball around. We need to let the natural talents, the natural ability of these players come out. Geelong, when a team's chaotic against them, they'll take a mark and you'll see it. It's take the mark, everyone, the hand, slow it down, everyone, slow it down. It's not go straight away when the opposition then are out of position. It's slow it down. Let's get all our stuff. What you spoke about a lot last year. They attack to defend.
No, they defend with the ball.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And they're continually doing that.
So they like the game in a methodical speed.
Yep.
Yeah.
So when Cameron comes back, Rowan comes back, and a few others come back.
Danger. Next week.
Dangerfield. He'd like to think he'd play in the midfield.
Stay on target.
But he doesn't. But so does that automatically mean they do go quicker? Because my gut feeling is that this problem will still remain, even if their forwards are back, because
They've got to be allowed to be chaotic.
They're almost too well-coached, if you want. Because they are so structural, the way they move the ball, the way they set up, it's fantastic. But what will end up happening? They've got the Kangaroos this week. They'll probably kick 1,000 points there, go back down home, they'll win a couple, and away they go. This has been the story of Geelong for the last 3 years.
But this is the thing. It's not about what's happening now.
I'm not saying that's right.
No. But what you say is right, is that they will do this because it happened last year and it happened the year before. And they'll qualify, but it'll come back to haunt them at some point in the final series, because it has.
Yeah. Look, yesterday they probably got the Oliver O'Connor matchup wrong.
Well, it worked in the previous 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It was the logical thing that they would do that.
Well, Petrarca was best on ground. And then there wasn't really a matchup, which I'm surprised about, for Bailey Fridge in that forward line. Yeah, like there's enough.
Who are they trying?
Stewart could have played on him. Colajazzi could have played on him. They tried to keep him on McDonald. Yeah. There's a number of matchups there, but those two guys were clearly the difference. And Max Gawn, he dominates in the ruck.
He was unbelievable, Max Gawn. Look, I know Petrarca was absolutely fantastic, and there was other players, but being live and watching Max Gawn, you just... I love him as a footballer, not because he comes in here, he's RSN zone, but you just watch and you just go, the impact you have on a game, like, you notice it more so live. I don't think on TV you actually understand the impact Max Gawn has. Like, the way he gets behind the ball, he disrupts defences. You know, it's almost like in basketball terms, when you've got a really good centre, how many shots he disrupts, how many inside forward 50s he disrupts. And I think they've got the balance right now. Jackson getting some maturity. It means Max doesn't have to do full length of the ground sprints. He now just sprints from the back half.
Exhausted by three quarter time.
Yeah.
Let's have a listen to Simon Goodwin, the coach of the D's, on the win. They're 4-0 for the first time since 1994.
Look, I think due to playing Geelong, you know, they're a high quality team and they have been for a number of years, and they're a very experienced team. So we certainly knew what we're up against, but you know, the AFL industry is tough no matter who you play. So to be sitting where we sit, you know, we're happy. There's still things we can improve on. There's no question about that. But I thought today, against a high-quality side, what we're trying to establish in our game was on show, and that was really pleasing.
Things are looking pretty good for the D's. 4-0, start the season, Hawthorn North Melbourne coming up.
Why are they playing so well, Jimmy? I mean, you mentioned Gawn and the obvious things that to talk about, Oliver and Petrarca and whatever else, but there's something different about this Melbourne to previous couple of years.
Yeah, I think I've touched on this before. I think when I've been to a couple of Melbourne's games this year, there's a real maturity about them. And I think, who do we speak to? Maybe Tomo, Adam Tomlinson.
Yes.
And we asked him that, and he said, and I've heard Jake Lever say this, when the opposition kick a few goals, they'd normally panic and spin the magnets and this match up and they'd be finger-pointing, but they're pretty calm, especially behind the ball. And I think they've got their defensive positioning really good. We know Jake Lever loves to get off an intercept. Mm. But yesterday I saw him. He was
awesome yesterday.
Yeah, he was take my direct opponent out and then come intercept the ball, which when defenders and mids and even forwards have this understanding of cutting the releases, it gives everyone more time. So it gives the mids a chance to chase and make that high long kick. It gives the backs a chance then to peel off. And I think they've got the cohesion going well between their lines.
Christian Petrarca spoke after the game and he was asked, well, what's going on? And he used the words team and sacrifice and selfless. I haven't heard that for a long time from Melbourne. You know, a lot of times from Melbourne it's been, I'll get my ball, I'll get my numbers and I'll be happy. But now there's a lot of teamwork and I think that's the real difference. Now, Petrarca, Oliver have been stars, Gawn's been stars, but there's been other, like Jake Lever now looks like the player that Melbourne recruited for the reason of the intercept marking. Ed Langdon looks really good out on the wing
his
there.
His kicking has gone. That's been the difference. Yeah. He's using the ball.
Viney is playing that bull role that we're so used to him playing. Petrarca's now one of the elite midfielders in the competition. Fritch is really damaging. Cozzy Pickett is that small forward that you need. So there's this mentality of team. Now, if Christian Petrarca is saying that outwardly to everybody after a game, there's no doubt it spoke about team, selfless, teamwork, all that sort of stuff internally.
And the thing is that they can bring Ben Brown, a 60-goal goal kicker, into that forward line with a team that's kicking the ball better inside 50 than what they have.
Mm. We'll see where it ends up. 1-300-652-927. Were the D's the most impressive team in round four? Or who was? Your take on it? 1-300-652-927. The D's going well. The Cats are 2-2 and still got some very winnable games coming, as you rightly say, Whitey. So not panic stations just yet. But I do want to hear from Chris Scott, who says after the game, it's not panic stations just yet.
I don't think we're going that well, but I think we're going better than we were this time last year. And you might say we're in a lockdown this time last year, but this stage of the season, it's a low bar, isn't it? So the upside is we're going better than we were this time last year. But, yeah, we struggled. We took a bit of time to hit our straps last year. And it was. That's not, I'm not saying it's the plan. We haven't gone in thinking let's just put ourselves to sleep for the first half of the year and then just get going when it really counts. Unfortunately, the way I'm looking at footy at the moment and have for some time, there aren't many free games out there, if any. And it's just, it's hard work every week. And if you allow yourself to get talked into the idea that we're not going that well, we can fall behind really quickly.
Chris Scott.
A mindset thing he's gone down the path of there.
A few gags too, really does.
Yeah. Bit of humour.
Humour. Bit of humour from Chris. So that's the Cat situation. Just before we leave that game, there was an incident with Tom Hawkins and Stephen May. Now, the D's...
Clumsy.
The D's confirmed that Stephen May is facing a decent stint on the sidelines to repair a potential fracture of his cheekbone or eye socket after the win against the Cats. Anything to worry about for Tom?
I don't think so. It was clumsy.
It was very clumsy.
No.
Okay. Adam?
No, but it was a bit odd. It was a bit odd.
Very odd. But...
it was clumsy. No doubt about that.
Geelong were 2-2 this time last year. So same as what they are now.
So they were playing better footy, I thought, last year.
They had that shock loss to Carlton by a couple of points down in Geelong in round three, and then they beat Melbourne in a really ordinary game. It was 47-44. And again, this is when we were talking about Geelong trying to hold the ball and not go forward and all those sorts of things this time last year. And then they managed to obviously turn it around.
Final part of this, can we judge Geelong without personnel? Really?
No, I don't think it's got anything to do with personnel, Rama. I think we judge Geelong on the fact that they are set up with that list to be a dominant team, and they're a very experienced team, and we feel with that firepower they should play a more attractive attacking brand of football.
I think Dangerfield takes it forward, but I think they have more of a method issue than a personnel issue.
Geelong and Collingwood are very similar, aren't they? It's methodology.
Hmm. If this is happening when Dangerfield and Cameron...
But it has been.
But
last year they played this way with Danger.
They made a grand final.
And true.
They were ahead by 15 points at half time.
Yeah, and played slow and got caught playing slow.
Hmm. So they did the year before in the preliminary final against Richmond.
We're going over old ground here with the Cats. 21 past 7, that's effectively what we're saying here. 2-2, and they've lost those... Well, they won those two games by 1 and 5 points. Not exactly dominant, the Cats, at the moment.
I thought Mumford just, we use him, he's a bit of a part-time ruckman these days, but he came in, he played his role. It's a pretty good gig, isn't it? He comes in and plays a game and then probably has 5 weeks off. It'd be great if all of us could do that.
It's good feedback from Leon Cameron there, the coach of the Giants. Quarter to 8 on a Monday morning. Shame. Jimmy Bartel with us in the Monday Footy Review, talking about Shane Mumford.
Shame.
5 on, 1 off.
That's a great system. No, 5 off.
Five off, one on, sorry.
What a great system the 5-game contract is.
Cade Simpson said he's going to the mid-season draft. I'm putting my name in if I'm going 5 and 1. Yeah, no, Mummy did it well with the school shoes on. Have you seen his footy boots?
Yeah, they're horrible. They're Butter Blues action, aren't they?
They're like when your kids first go to prep and... they've got the brand new big black school shoes on.
Hey, just Smith sort of stuff.
Can I just talk about Windsor footy boots Smith for 1 second? I was very, very proud. My son played his first game footy back yesterday, and we ordered boots for him. And I said, just pick whatever boots you want. Black boots.
Black boots.
Oh, yes.
Black boots.
Ooh,
black boots. I was so happy.
Man after my home. But sort of there's black Mumford boots stuff. And there's Shane Mumford, who look like he's taking them off half cat.
Jeremy Finlayson was wearing some nice boots on Saturday night. They kicked truly as well. 4 snags in the 30-point win over the Magpies. He joins us from the Giants. Good morning, Jeremy.
Hey, guys. How are you going?
We are going very well, thanks. What sort of boots are you running with these days, just by the way?
I'm running with concave, actually. Concave footy boots.
What colour? What colour?
White.
Yeah. Have you tried Shane Mumford's school shoes on? He looks like he's about to fall over.
Yeah, I actually have. I was with Asics a couple of years ago. So, yeah, the old school shoes.
Michael Theoklatos, he's in concave, isn't he?
He is.
Yeah, I think he is. Hey, it was a good performance on the weekend. Coming into the game, zipping three, Jeremy, I imagine there would have been a fair bit of anxiety, you can tell us, or pressure building at the Giants. And the Magpies at the MCG is never an easy task. What was the vibe like leading into the game?
Yeah, I guess obviously last week against the D's, we played a pretty good brand of footy. We just unfortunately had a few injuries and just ran out of legs in the last quarter. But I guess young boys have been holding everyone really, really good, I guess. The feeling was pretty good going into the game. Like I said, we played two pretty good games against like St Kilda and Melbourne, but just fell short against Fremantle over there. But I guess the feeling was pretty good. And Leon just had one message, just believed that we could do it as a young group. And obviously with the injuries against Demons, we just went out there and just gave it everything. We had probably everyone wrote us off not to win it. And just went out there and believed that we could get it done. And just all our young boys coming through is just pushing us, the older boys, a lot better footy, so which is good.
Jez, you mentioned that word belief. Did a bit of belief get drawn on from the fact that the preliminary final, your back's against the wall, same sort of conditions against Collingwood a couple of years ago? It was a little bit of that drawn on?
Yeah, I guess obviously on Saturday night footy against one of the biggest clubs in the AFL, you always want to perform. And I guess, like I said, our young boys are playing unbelievable footy. We've been building on this win for the whole pre-season and the first three rounds. Obviously, it's so tight this year. You win, you lose. It's just like that. And, our young boys are just staying in the game. And, we're just pretty happy to get the win.
You look like you're trying to take more attacking options with the ball, which obviously benefited yourself and Toby. Was that a bit of a message to be a bit braver with the ball?
Yeah, we got Adam Snyder and obviously Stevie J here for our ball movement, and just telling our young boys just to go for them kicks and play through the middle of the ground. Obviously, we want to try and take the game on, and like every other club, and I guess with them teaching us that, and as a young group, the boys just believe we can do that, and they back themselves in, and we're just lucky enough to get that on the weekend.
When you're scouting a team, Jeremy, what was the one area that you looked at against Collingwood and thought, we really need to take that away for us to win the game?
Yeah, probably everywhere, to be honest. They're a very good side. Obviously, Grundy in the middle. And I guess us up forward, they start their ball movement from the back half. And I guess playing against Darcy Moore and Jeremy Howe, Roughhead, they're great intercept marks. Us three talls, me, Riccardi and Himmelberg, we just had to bring the ball down and stuff. And felt like we did that, and I think that just stopped their ball movement from the back half, and I think that was their main scoring. When they muck the footy in the back half, they energise, get forward, and they're really a dangerous side. So if we could eliminate that, which we did on Saturday night, then it would have went to a long way to winning it.
So was it a real focus of where you guys positioned, and that meant where then Darcy Moore and Jeremy Howe were positioning? So where the ball was, let's call it centre wing, where then you wanted to position Jeremy Howe and Darcy Moore, was that spoken about?
Yeah, obviously you want to try and drag them away where they're uncomfortable. I guess that's like every other team. They want to drag us or beat us up every weekend. I think we had to try and take Howe and Moore's body more than what we normally do against like the other key back when they do that against us. I guess you just got to engage them. Obviously, Howe's unbelievable mark, so is Darcy Moore. I think you just had to take their body way more than what we normally like try to do in a game, obviously because they're superstars at marking the footy. And, you just try and pull them to the centre of the ground on a boundary throw-in and, just try and manipulate them that way.
So, Jim, I want to ask you about the other team that was there on Saturday night.
Okay.
Sort of. The Magpies.
What do you mean, sort of? They were there.
Well,
don't be mean to poor Collingwood supporters.
Were they there? What are they? Are they in the position now? Has it got to the point where they have to start to think about what 2021 looks like, and play accordingly, and build a list accordingly, and select accordingly, or is it not quite at that point yet? We talked about Brisbane before.
Yes.
Being probably 2 weeks shy of really assessing them. Is it similar with Collingwood, or does Nathan Buckley, like he spoke about after the game, have to start thinking about what it looks like going forward in black and white?
A bit of both. I heard you gentlemen talking about it on my way in, and it's a bit like we were saying with Geelong. Is it personnel or is it methodology? I think it's more the method first, and then the personnel will help their method. Because to flip that, if they move some players they've already got in that side, like I'd like to see someone like Dacos or that DeGoey just really spit forward at clearances and stop plays, because they've already got Brody Grundy, and I said this last week, I see him as an inside mid. Like, I know he's the ruckman, but the way he plays, he's a butter up inside mid. So you've actually, that's an advantage over other sides, because the way he can win the footy and can wear the clearances, which means you can be even more proactive with somebody else. And I think this will help their hit outs to advantage, the clearance numbers, which allows them to play it a bit more in their forward half, because if you have Grundy, Pendlebury, I know Adams is out, but Sire in there. You have four players who love to play the game a metre from the ball. Who have, that's their strength. Mm. Like Penderbury's a genius at it. Taylor Adams is. Sire is, you know, really close to the ball sort of winner. And then you've got Grundy. But if you're the opposition and you're forward scouting, you just ring that.
Ring it, yep.
And you might win it, but if you lose it, you sort of got them covered in there anyway. You force like a hack kick out there or a hurried exit from stoppages or contested play. So I think the personnel first, actually, that you've got. And then let's start looking at, they've got a pretty good injury list. Start filtering some of these young players through like the Crows did. You know, we mentioned the Crows.
Yep.
You start filtering them through. And then if it gets worse, then you start giving them more responsibility in the side.
So we were talking about this before, that Collingwood, it was only a couple of years ago that they made a grand final and very nearly won a grand final with a similar sort of list to what they've got now, other than the players that they got rid of
four players is a lot.
And all four in their best 15 or 16 players, arguably, or maybe 18.
Yeah, but one of those, a couple of those players, you had depth in that position, and then it became a salary cap issue. So, you know, a couple of those players you moved on played that wing, high, half forward role, and you had Josh Dacos emerging, probably on a cheaper rate. So I get we go hindsight, oh, we could have kept him, but it still would have been a list management balancing decision anyway.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's the right or wrong decision, but my point is that they were part of a 2018 team. Is this now just a new team? Is this a different team? Do they have to head in a different direction? Do they have to play the kids, or does Nathan Buckley hold on with what he knows to try and go one more year with this group of players? Because he is playing a lot of guys that he was loyal to, that he kind of feels like he's been loyal to what they were doing from back in 2018.
So, Jim, just to highlight that point from Whitey, they're the seventh youngest list, the Magpies.
I didn't think they were old.
They're not old.
But they were the second oldest, or the oldest list on the weekend.
Second most experienced game.
So there is that core of young players and inexperienced players in the Magpies, but they're not playing, and they haven't played. I think that's the point with everyone and the assessment of Collingwood at the moment. He's been really loyal, I think it's a good word,
which
Whitey,
to his
established players, the ones that have got him nearly to the top of the mountain a couple of years ago. But they do have some talent underneath. That's what they've done. They've got seventh youngest list, but they're playing the oldest team every week. So there's an imbalance there between energy and youthful exuberance. We're seeing Richmond integrate some young players at the moment. Collingwood aren't doing that.
So my question is, if Nathan Buckley starts to play the kids and they don't get the results, does that affect him coaching them next year? Or is he trying to coach them to get as many wins as he can to try and get it? And now I know that he's selfless, Nathan, and he'll do what's best for the club. But it's all,
coaching to play finals.
But I feel that they have got to a point, or Nathan Buckley's got to the point, the football club's got to the point where they go, we might need to make a decision now on playing the kids, which might be a step back, to go with the step back of dumping the players from last year. And then we go, you know what? The pressure's off a little bit. We're starting to go the next generation.
You're changing the expectation.
That's right.
But I didn't have...
Can Nathan Buckley afford to do that?
But it depends what the expectation was from Collingwood. My expectation of Collingwood wasn't to play finals. So, you can play the kids and you can be a little bit more open with that. But
theirs would have been.
Yeah, theirs would have been. But then it comes back to those great words that you've... was it selection integrity? Yeah, I get you can play young kids, but
if they're not playing well enough in the reserves,
you can't play them. But that goes for the senior players. Sorry, Ramat. The senior players, if they're not playing well, you can't just keep picking them on reputation.
Stand by, Ramat. Let's have a listen to Nathan Buckley just ahead on that discussion after the game.
We can't get 1-3 and sit on your hands. Like we think we've picked the best sides to get results, and we haven't. So we've got to look at changes, whether that's the way we play, whether we strip things back, the way we prepare, or personnel. Like there's plenty of things that will be assessed in that regard.
So they've picked the teams that they wanted to win. Clearly, that's a stupid thing to say, but they thought the players that they put out there were the ones to get the job done. That's not happening at the moment, so now is the time to start looking elsewhere.
Do you think of it differently if Brisbane Lions missed their kick after the siren? So they'd be 2-2.
Yeah.
Is this a completely different conversation?
No, I'm not.
Well, I would hope not.
But we're saying they're old. Just... So give me an example of an older player at Collingwood that needs to be left out of the team now for a younger player to come in that's capable of playing that role.
Well, they don't have it. They're an interesting list, full stop. They don't have old players. Well, Scott Pendlebury is their oldest player at 33. So Mayne's 32, Greenwood's 32. Both those players played on the weekend. Jeremy Howe's 30, Jordan Ruffhead's 30, Steele Sidebottom's 30, Mason Coxer's 30. So there you're over 30s. And there's four of those that are actually 30 on the dot.
Yeah.
So they're not an old no. list, but they've got the plus 27s, the plus 26s. That's is a good chunk of their list, and they're all playing. That's effectively what's happened.
I don't think it's a thing about them being the old players. It's players that have been in the team for quite a while that are just going okay.
That's more what I'm getting.
St Kilda, how did they turn it around within the game? But also, what did they do differently from the week before where we all were starting to get a little bit worried?
Pressure, intent, effort. Nothing to do with skill and nothing to do with the nice, beautiful things that come with football. It was energy and intent. And we spoke about this with Melbourne, cohesion, the selflessness. When players and teams understand that those things, if they're the bedrock, that you actually get a greater opportunity to shine and show your talents. So when St Kilda started to do that, then they all got the ability to shine and show their talents.
Dan Butler was pretty good in the second half.
Well, he hasn't had a big impact in the last couple of weeks, has he,
yeah.
Mate Diane?
He's pretty important to them. He just X factor, excitement, hit the scoreboard. So, yeah, he was obviously Big Max was terrific, 5 goals. But when Dan Butler's hitting the scoreboard, 3 goals 2, I think he kicked half.
Dan certainly kicked 3 goals 2.
Yeah, so I thought that was a big... But to Jim's point, pressure, effort, particularly around the contest, but between the arcs now, if you're not providing or demonstrating pressure, it's too easy to pierce through, particularly at Marvel Stadium. You need to continually be pressuring disposal through the middle of the ground, otherwise the ball moves too quickly. In the first half against West Coast, the ball was moving too quickly. Kennedy, Darling, Oscar Allen, it was easy for West Coast. As soon as they started to apply pressure, it allowed the St Kilda defenders then to position themselves a lot better and counterattack the other way.
Yeah, I like it when they bring at least one, maybe two of those smaller forward types up closer to the stoppage. Agreed. In the contest, because they actually got some serious wheels going back towards goal, which one, that's a bonus to help you score, but two, it gives you a greater opportunity to put pressure on, which then gives your backs a better chance. So I think that's a bit of structural stuff, but you need the energy and intent to execute it.
So 5 goals was the difference at halftime, fundamentally, 28 points, and they were able to
they
turn
won by
that
20.
Around.
Got to 33.
Yeah, 33.
And then they kicked the last 23 points of the third quarter.
Yep. So
53-point turnaround.
The two parts of that for me that are interesting, your thoughts, are, is that what Ratten needed to sort of be able to say, there you go, this is what happens when you do what you need to do. But also, what's Adam Simpson thinking when the pressure got turned up, how West Coast kind of combusted?
Well, from the Brett Ratten point of view, you take a big phew, because you do it when you're half as a coach, that when you've stripped it all back bare and you've torn paint off the walls of meetings and you've had things like that. If you don't get a response,
else to go.
You'd be going, oh dear, what do I go in this Monday about?
Yep.
So there's actually probably a great sense of relief from Brett Ratten and the coaching staff, Rammer.
West Coast had 36 inside 50s for the game.
Yeah, it's not enough.
No, that's not cutting. So first half, no worries. They're on track. Then they got destroyed through the middle of the ground in that second half. Absolutely destroyed.
Is that a real confidence?
Luke Shuey's a massive
for them,
loss.
Or are they...
Massive loss. I will. I agree. Now, Collingwood going over there. Collingwood play well in WA. They always have. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. They might like WA water. Who knows what it is? But they always play well. So West Coast, I don't think necessarily go into this week's game against the Pies confident. But 36 inside 50s with a forward line of Kennedy, Darling, Oscar Allen,
Flying
Ryan. Nah.
Cripps.
You can't win.
Not going to happen. I wouldn't have thought too often. Rowan Marshall's inclusion.
Well, it was a different injury, wasn't it?
He's popped it now, hasn't he?
Yeah, no, but the fact he was there in the first place helped. The Paddy Ryder's in the state. Were you talking about that last week, Paddy
Ryder?
Yeah,
he's back.
He's back in town, so hopefully he gets out there and can assist. Pressure and intensity is a funny thing. Like 32 tackles against Essendon, and they had 120 less disposals, so they should have been tackling a whole lot more. On the weekend, they had 69 tackles, and they had 80 more disposals.
Yeah, plus.
So,
it gets you closer.
Plus 20-odd contested footy.
Yeah.
So, sometimes when... You play
right back.
Yeah, sometimes when you play the game, you think you're getting close to the contest, but you actually get the best seat in the house. You're a metre from the contest too far, and you're just running along up and down the ground watching from the best seats in the house.
Yeah.
When you actually when you put like a tackling focus, it actually gets you closer to the contest. It's like a cue in your head where I got to get close enough to tackle, which actually gets you in a great position to win the ball as well.
Yep.
The one key stat that Brett Ratton will highlight throughout the week is tackles inside 450. You talk about those small guys because that's how they're set up. They've got bigs, then they've got smalls. 18 tackles inside 450 to 6.
That's a lot. You talk about tackles. Brad Cratch had 12 on his own.
Bobby Boucher.
To go with his 15 26. Contested possessions and 26 disposals overall, and he'll be with us tomorrow morning. Daniel.
Looking forward to chatting to Brad about that. Port Adelaide had a great win on Friday night when Ramo won the face-off. Mm. But it came at a cost.
Big cost.
It came at a cost. Dersma
and Butters
and both out for extended periods of time.
6 weekers.
Yeah. How big a blow is that? I mean, we're talking about teams at the top of the tree here and the best teams in footy, hoping to lock in top four spots. And Port Adelaide would want to have one of those spots.
And you can probably throw Fantasia into that also with the ankle.
A ratio.
So that's their speed. That's their excitement. That's their X factor. So Port Adelaide, I thought, out Richmond on Friday night. If you get they played their chaotic game. And without those, particularly those three guys, they're their runners. They're their excitement. They're their unpredictability. Now, who comes in for those sort of guys?
Probably Bonner would be one that come in who's been in and out of the side. They got some depth on their list at the moment. The Port Adelaide pair, but you can't replace that sort of class.
And they're long injuries, particularly the two Dersma and Butters.
Well, let's just say they miss five. Mm. Their next five: Carlton away, St Kilda at home, Brisbane away, the Showdown, and then they've got the Bulldogs.
Ooh, some fitty fitties. Yeah.
So not
tiebreaker
really,
games, Whitey. Tiebreakers.
Not really the right time to have those players out of the side.
Never a good time.
They look terrific. Their cult figure in Lockie Jones the look of him just is outstanding with the moustache and the sort of the mullet.
He's a big dude, isn't he? Yeah. Thick dude.
He was like you in under 12. you'd relate to that. You were that big, weren't you?
You're an idiot, mate.
Having seen him at 13, he's pretty much that's what he was.
The answer is correct. It's not important right now. Not important right now.
But the one key for Port Adelaide that's really changed them is Alirelia.
Mm.
So it allows Jonas and Cleary to play their natural roles now on. Yeah. Sort of, they don't have to play on the big guys.
But they're also a real defend-first type defenders, and O'Leary is watch the ball, go the ball, defend.
Intercept mark. Yeah. He can play on whatever's down there almost.
Give it to Gary Ayres, the tools and the smalls. Yeah.
They're going to... Well, the Tigers, I mean, another minute they probably win that game. Yeah. They were coming thick and fast. Are you concerned about the Tigers? They're sitting below Carlton on the ladder for the first time in a long time.
You give me their win-loss record in every premiership year at about 10 games. They've normally been fitty-fitty.
4-0 the first two, and then they were 2-2 similar to this in the last one.
It's all right.
Just interesting to see what they do with personnel over the next couple of weeks.
As I mentioned before, there's a couple of kids getting a look, which we haven't seen from the Tigers of recent times.
But they did that when they had a lot of injuries when they won the middle premiership.
Were they last year? What, five?
Like Ross and Stack and all them coming
to the side. They had more injuries than what they kind of do at the moment. They've got a couple now. They've got St Kilda and Melbourne in their next two, and then they've got the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
It's a good little test for them.
We'll find out a bit.
And then Geelong.
Oh, 4 weeks.
Oh, boy.
Not playing great footy. Not playing poor footy, but not playing great footy with that four in the next. And I reckon we'll find out a lot about Richmond on Thursday night against St Kilda, because St Kilda kind of troubled them a bit.
Where's the game at?
Road game down at Marvel.
No, but that's a big thing. Like,
no, it's at Marvel.
That's their interstate trip.
Like that.
They will St Kilda will love that, yes. St Kilda on the MCG.
That's a tough run, St Kilda, Melbourne, Bulldogs, Geelong.
I reckon No, they'll be fine.
So what would you expect Richmond out of those four, four to four. Go?
3-1.
That'll be 4-4.
4-4?
4-4. The Blues had a win over the Suns on Saturday night at Metricon Stadium. Blues needed the win, clearly. Yes. What are you going to say?
I don't think that loss should be glossed over, and I know we don't really have time for it now. I think that was a really impressive win, considering the players that Carlton had out and Cripps didn't dominate.
Well, I could have rucked for Gold Coast, though. They were out.
Yeah, but that still was a good win, I reckon, for Carlton.
I'm with you. I think it was a good win and an important one. Puts them 2-2.
Important win.
Yep. Yeah, not so much a great win, but an important win.
Keeps the Wolves from the door.
It was a win.
Have we got the...
We got Port Adelaide this week, so...
I think that's all they needed, though, was a win.
Yeah.
1-3 going into Port Adelaide is different to 2-2 Port Adelaide.
Correct.
We got the prognosis on Jack Silvani and his shoulder.
No, nothing yet.
That was outstanding. That little bit of pressure in the last quarter to lay that tackle. He hurt himself, obviously, again with that shoulder. It was a big play in the game.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.